Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Times Red Box podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Now, an extraordinary day today. The Labour anti-Semitism report is absolutely damning and utterly grim and depressing. So we're not going to talk about that on the podcast. Today, we want to talk about the US elections. We've got our own focus group from America. James Johnson, who normally does the focus groups for us on Times Radio, has done one with some swing voters in Pennsylvania. And because Halloween is coming up, I've been digging into ghost stories from Downing Street, spooky goings on behind the famous door of number 10. So if you want to find out more about what happened with the anti-Semitism report in the Labour Party, you can listen back to my show on the Times Radio app. But for now, let's get stuck into our US focus group. Every month since we started on Times Radio, we've run a focus group exactly like those done by Downing Street and political parties to gauge in more detail what people are thinking about politics. And since we launched, we've looked at the government's handling of coronavirus, we've looked at Scottish independence, and obviously what people think of the party leaders. Boris Johnson, generally the mood is he's doing a good job in a bad situation. Keir Starmer is a sort of, who's Keir Starmer? And everybody still loves Rishi. But with 5 days until the US election, we've crossed the Atlantic for our latest focus group carried out by former Downing Street pollster James Johnson in association with Kex CNC. And James joins us now. Hi, James.
Good morning.
Just talk us through how this works, doing an American focus group, what we should take from it, and why Pennsylvania?
Yeah, well, obviously, usually it would involve a fun trip to the US, but this time we are confined to Zoom. But very similar way of it working. We've recruited a mix of voters in Pennsylvania. Largely, they voted Trump in 2016, but they're now undecided about how they'll vote. Now, as with the UK ones, we need to be cautious. You know, a focus group isn't a poll, but doubly so here. You know, if the polls are right and the Real Clear Politics average has Biden ahead by about 4 points in Pennsylvania at the moment, if the polls are right, then there aren't that many undecided voters left in this election. So Biden doesn't necessarily have to win over our focus group respondents to win the contest. But what they do, as in the UK, is tell us about where these voters' minds are and, crucially, the strengths and weaknesses of the candidates and the messages that are working best as we move into the final days of this campaign.
OK, let's dive right in then. This is always one of the best bits when you've done it with British politicians, when you ask them to sum up individuals in a sentence. So this is what they had to say about Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is a know-it-all, business genius.
Politically right, offensively wrong.
I would say he was probably had the most potential of any president I've ever seen in my lifetime. Other than I believe he needs to have more empathy for people, more understanding. He needs to have more people skills in terms of business and decisions. And I think he really had the most potential of any president I've ever seen. But right now I don't feel as strong, but I just feel like not like Obama. He had a lot of people skills.
I would say he is a business genius, an absolute patriot, but very rough around the edges. His patriotism is amazing.
I was going to say, I appreciate that he doesn't give you the typical political talk. He says how it is, straightforward, but unfortunately, most of it's a lie. So I would say he is a sad, sad, sad excuse for a party that I normally vote for.
Around the Edges was a good description by Lori. I would say he confuses me and wish that what he talks that he could produce.
Again, I agree with he is a business genius, but in order for him to be a good president, I think he also has to be receptive to other people's opinions.
I kind of agree with the tenor of the people in here. I think business-wise, he's done a lot of good things to spur the economy and fatten our retirement portfolios, but diplomatically and leadership-wise, he's very challenged.
So a mixed bag there. Business genius seems to come up a lot, James, not least a phrase that Donald Trump's used about himself. But there's a lot of sort of, I mean, if you've got to sum all of that up in a phrase, all talk, slightly less action?
Yeah, a bit of that. And actually this division between sort of, and it came through in a lot of the conversation, this division between sort of pre-COVID Trump and post-COVID, you know, a lot of those plus points that they quite liked about Trump in 2016, the business side, patriotism, not a usual politician, you can see it's still there for these voters, but they're not as enthusiastic as they were. And a lot of that is this distinction they make between before coronavirus and afterwards. And that seems to have coloured a lot of views of him for the negative.
OK, let's take a listen to what they had to say about the other guy in this race. This is what the focus group had to say about Joe Biden.
Seems like a nice guy. And the only reason I'm thinking about possibly voting for him is because maybe then there won't be rioting.
Biden in general, I'm worried that Biden is the same old politician that we were trying to get rid of 4 years ago.
Very indecisive. Like he just said, might be the same situation. And I really can't pull out no crucial information for him.
I feel he might be a little sick. Like old, sick, dementia. I don't know. That's how I feel about him. I feel that he might be a little sick.
I just feel it's just an extension of the same old political elites, what we were trying to get rid of, the Hillary Clintons and Bill Clintons, and the same old political elites are always in power.
I don't want another 4 years of Obama or Clinton, so I will not be voting for Joe Biden.
Stable, balanced ticket, it seems.
I mean, I like his stance on education and the environment. I'm concerned about what I've heard about his mental state, having signs of dementia.
And this came up time. I mean, this focus group lasted an hour and a half, James, but this came up time and time again. Didn't it? Concerns about Joe Biden's health.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, one respondent even suggested that Biden could have a body decoy. This is sort of how far-reaching these concerns were. It's interesting though, because one of the things that sort of seemed more potent was this concern about sort of, is he just another politician? Somebody described it in the focus group as a change of chairs if he won. You know, it would just be just going back to that sort of old order of things. It's quite interesting because Trump made quite a bit of that in the last debate. But it generally hasn't been really, you know, a message he's been hammering home. So it's interesting how this focus group reveals some of those shortcomings of both of the campaigns where, you know, those messages that are really working with voters, perhaps because of how undisciplined a candidate Trump is, they're not always making.
OK, but let's take a listen to you asked them, who are they leaning towards vote? Because these are eight swing voters in the state of Pennsylvania. So let's take a listen to who they said they were leaning towards backing next week.
Trump. I think he gets things done. I just think he needs to have a little more empathy and try to be better to people and just try to get along better. Like,
I'm probably leaning toward Trump because of what he's done to the economy.
Biden.
And why is that?
Leaning toward Biden. Like I said, still undecided, but leaning.
Ooh, a little bit towards Trump.
I'm leaning Trump because why I'm looking at it is if this election was last November, it would be no question I would be voting for Trump.
I'm going to say Trump because I would not sleep well voting for a president in favor of the murdering of unborn children.
I would have to lean towards President Trump as well.
So I'm leaning towards Trump because I'm proud to be an American and he's proud to be an American and I got to believe in something.
So, I mean, as you were saying at the beginning, James, we shouldn't read too much. These are what, 8 people. It's not a poll, this. Should the Trump campaign take any comfort from this, though? And I suppose the fact that they are only leaning and not definite at this stage of the campaign, you know, time's running out, really, to try and firm those up.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine some of our listeners might be a bit worried by that. But look, I mean, Pennsylvania is one of the tighter states. It's tighter than Wisconsin and Michigan in that part of the U.S. So perhaps no huge surprise that, you know, some of these positive things they felt about Trump before are still sort of coming through. And, you know, what's very clear is that these voters aren't sort of enamored with Biden. So I expect we are going to see a relatively tight race there. Like I say, you know, Biden doesn't need to win all of these, but it does show you that things are a little bit tighter. And Trump does have those plus points still, you know, get things done, proud to be an American. Some of those things, you know, related to the ideology of the Republican Party, like we heard over abortion there. So, yeah, he's certainly still got some strong points. I mean, I think, you know, if we were hearing this focus group 4 or 5 weeks ago, then, you know, perhaps we would be able to say, well, you know, Trump can replicate this with other undecideds. But as we know, when we zoom back and zoom out and look at the polls, it may just be a little bit too late.
OK, let's focus on one voter in particular, a former Republican who was saying that they wouldn't vote for Donald Trump.
I see the world getting worse. So I'm someone who normally vote Republican because I'm a pro-life activist. And this is the first time where I don't know how I'm going to vote because I'm very unhappy with the current president. So I see it getting worse. I don't see anything getting better anytime soon.
Okay. Why is that, Robin?
Well, where most of us are in Pennsylvania, it's cold and flu season. There's no vaccine out. Not that I personally would even feel safe taking it, but nonetheless, there's no vaccine. It's flu season. Right. So people are just going to be getting sick left and right. It's going to be really chaotic because people are going to be terrified. Do they have the flu? Do they have COVID? It's very hard to distinguish the two.
I mean, part of me thinks, James, if he hasn't got her in the bag, that's the problem, isn't it?
I think certainly that there is that to an extent. And, you know, we've certainly obviously seen, you know, quite a lot of Biden's advertising and Biden's message being focused around winning some of these former Republican voters. I mean, one interesting thing there, Matt, is just, you know, this sort of just very despairing view of the US in this focus group. And it came up again and again, you know, really feeling it was going in the wrong direction, real frustration about division and polarization. It's a contrast with our UK groups, because although we do get some doom and gloom in our UK groups, you know, it really is on another level in the US in terms of how much that polarization goes through. You know, people talking about two worlds of Republicans and Democrats, real doubts about the media coming up all the time. Quite an interesting contrast there with our sort of slightly more upbeat focus groups in the UK.
Is that because, do you think, Donald Trump obviously was elected on a wave of sort of, I mean, he painted a very bleak picture back 4 years ago, but he was elected on the promise of Make America Great Again. And that was a very sort of positive, optimistic message. And actually sort of try to run on the same thing again by, you know, he's sort of trying to simultaneously talk the America that he's been running for 4 years down, while also claiming he's the man who can fix it. So if everyone is basically saying that, you know, you've got both Biden and Trump saying the country's in a terrible state, and so I suppose it's no great surprise that our focus group panelists are a bit depressed.
Yeah, I think that's right, and it also gets to that polarization in U.S. society. You know, we talk about culture war issues in the UK, but actually a lot of those swing voters in the UK don't much mind about statues or trans toilets or whatever it might be. Whereas in the US, these things are actually, you know, they're really ingrained in political identity. So that really makes, and we had some respondents in this focus group talking about, you know, how when they go to work, they're the only Democrat there, or when they're at home, they're the only Republican. So, you know, it sort of pervades real life in a much more far-reaching way than in the UK as well.
Okay, one of the things we've discussed, you know, Joe Biden's health act, somebody's just texted in taking issue with the descriptions of Joe Biden as being possibly having dementia and being too old at 77. We should point out this is the views, the focus group. It's not my views particularly. But as a result, that conversation then moves on to the role of Kamala Harris in all of this, who's Joe Biden's running mate. And obviously the suggestion that if he, you know, given his age, it's not impossible that she might end up having to replace him. Let's take a listen to their views on Kamala Harris.
Are you ready to talk about his running mate?
Go for it.
Okay, so my biggest fear is Kamala Harris.
Harris.
Mm-hmm. That is my biggest fear in this country. So,
and why is that?
She's the most liberal senator in Congress. And what if he is in fact a Trojan horse? We are now having the most liberal senator as our president.
Yeah, she is kind of harsh. She is kind of forceful with hers. And like she said, I am kind of scared. And that's like that's what I mean, like with the puppet on a string situation. You know, it's everybody is on Biden, but they're not really prepared for what Ms. Harris is basically trying to induct and bring in. I don't know. I would kind of take Trump over having them to, you know.
So this is really interesting. I mean, the sort of, you know, lefty liberal British Twitter-arty commentary. I obviously absolutely love Kamala Harris, the first black woman running for office in the United States. But it's a reminder that we're two countries separated by the same language. You know, liberal is about the most offensive thing that some people think they can say about someone.
Yeah, indeed. It's worth remembering, of course, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, it may well work very well with African-American voters or indeed, you know, younger liberal voters that Biden also needs to turn out. But yeah, certainly with these swing voters in Pennsylvania, sort of real concerns and this feeling of, you know, there's this more left-wing agenda. I did think it was interesting, though, there is a flip side to this, that none of those concerns about being far left or radical or liberal or harsh, whatever they might be, Trojan horse, none of those came up in regards to Biden himself. It was all sort of, you know, channeled through Kamala Harris. Now, that's obviously not great news for Kamala Harris, and the Trump campaign may well try and use that argument more in the closing days. But it does remind us that this Trump attack, that Biden is somehow on the left, that Biden is somehow this radical socialist waiting to get in and, you know, bring in the Green New Deal and you know, huge government spending or whatever else, isn't really falling flat. It tends to be channeled through their views of Kamala Harris rather than Joe Biden.
And so if people are up all night on Tuesday, I mean, they're obviously going to be listening to me on Times Radio from 1 a.m. Bringing you the results as they come in. What should we be keeping an eye out for with Pennsylvania?
Well, I think, you know, I think there's just two things, really. There's one, this sort of white working class vote, the swing voters, who we obviously listened to a bit there today. They're going to be very key in terms of whether Joe Biden kind of rode that vote enough. But also, you know, turnout in cities like Philadelphia, African-American turnout too. So, and ultimately, Trump only won this state by 0.7% in 2016. So it's a very, very tightly ran state. Biden could, you know, up turnout in the cities and win it, or he could, you know, win over the swing voters in the countryside and also win it. So yeah, it's a tight state. It could well be the tipping state and the tipping point state and the decider. What we see here is that Biden may not have totally sealed the deal with the undecided voters, but like I said, maybe it is just too late in the campaign for that.
If you enjoy listening to Times journalists and commentators here on the podcast, well, you can now subscribe to The Times. Don't miss our flash sale. Subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times with 50% off for 6 months. But the sale ends this Friday, the 30th of October at 5 o'clock. Search thetimes.co.uk/timesred.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Box. So these are some sort of DVD extras that you've got here. We didn't have time on the radio to play out all of the focus group material that we picked up. But James asked the group what they thought about Britain.
For Europe, I feel very sad for Europe. I think you got, you are in a lockdown.
Like you said, I did hear that y'all did open up to the public at one point, and then slowly but drastically, y'all started shutting a couple things down.
It feels like compared to the U.S., they're a place of social peace. Since there's an uptick in COVID cases, they're at a state of economic crisis.
So that was what the group thought about Britain. What did the American voters think about Boris Johnson?
I think I like him.
Tell me more, Laurie.
I really don't know. I mean, I think he's a fair leader. I think I can't speak as a citizen, you know, only you can. But the media portrayal of him is pretty good. He got COVID, right? He beat COVID. I think of all the countries, you're probably one of the safest.
And so during the time when he did get COVID and he was in the ICU and had a baby, I think at the same time, but he did an about face, and he came out of, you know, his, he rebounded and said, you know, this is a serious disease. And he's been very, I think, firm, trying to confirm with the citizens and what you need to do. And so when Trump became positive, I think we were all worried, no matter, you know, what party you were affiliated with.
So we'll wait to see how that all pans out. Does Pennsylvania back Trump or Biden? You can find out by listening to me live on Times Radio from 1 a.m. on Wednesday morning as I present the show through the night with all the latest results. But before that, Saturday is Halloween, and so we've been looking into the spooky goings-on in Downing Street.
So it's not like I had a lot of extra time on my hands, but I was fascinated when I started hearing quite a lot of ghost chat behind the scenes in Downing Street. And it was sort of there was the famous story, which is from the facilities manager who swears, and I've talked to him about it, that he saw a woman in white, and he, you know, he sort of felt a taffeta dress walk past him. And I started asking questions of lots of the staff there, the long-serving staff, particularly the people who, you know, work behind the scenes, and I guess frequent the rooms away from the kind of the more grand state rooms. But there are ghosts all around, so you have to watch out when you're in Downing Street.
So you sort of go through, you've compiled this collection of stories, and there's just about every sort of ghost that ghost fans might think about. So you've got, I mean, talk us through some of your favourite stories, but there's from children laughing to smells to footsteps to curtains blowing when the windows don't open. So talk us through some of your favourite stories that you compiled.
So I think there are, I've actually looked up the types of ghost, just, you know, I want to do a proper job for you. And the residual hauntings are things like whispers, and people had their names called, you know, a few people over many years had had their names. In fact, I think one of the cleaners was called Maggie. So we don't know whether the ghost was calling out for Maggie the cleaner or another famous Maggie. You know, there were giggles. And this often happened when there was staff working on nights, or when at weekends when there should have been no one there and there were no children in the building. People smelt stuff, cigar smoke. I mean,
so who could that have been if it was cigar smoke, to be
who
saying?
Could that have been? So these amazing, though, there's all sorts of amazing stories. I spoke to the to the people, and I trusted the people that told these stories. Yeah, and there's so much of it. One of my favourites was that one of the front of house staff went down to deliver something to the garden rooms, and one of the girls turned round as he walked through the door and said, "Get your cold hands off my neck." And he was really horrified that he was being accused of this, and said, "Firstly, I'd never do that, and also I've just walked through the door. There's no way that could be me." And this poor woman she refused ever to work down there again unless someone would sit with her.
Wow!
And I don't. Yeah, it's really spooky.
And were you aware of, because like you said, a lot of the time it's the staff, and particularly in rooms at the very top of the building and in the number 10 flat and that sort of thing. Were you ever aware that senior politicians, cabinet ministers, world leaders ever came across ghosts in Downing Street?
I can't say. I would love to be able to tell you a first-hand or a second-hand account of either the PM or the Chancellor when I was having encountered a ghost, but I can't, I'm afraid, deliver that for you. But I do know that there were beds, for example, that were sat on. One of the house staff was changing a bed. I don't know what year this was. And she kept turning around, and every time she turned around to this freshly made bed, someone had sat on it again. Absolutely. She swore that this happened repeatedly. That's pretty spooky to happen up in one of the flats.
And we should probably talk about Spencer Percival, the former Prime Minister, the only Prime Minister to be assassinated in office. And there's some suggestion that he appears in spirit form when the nation is facing an emergency. So presumably he's been very well spotted in Downing Street in the last few months.
He must not be resting at the moment. And I'd love to talk to some of the Downing Street staff at the moment. I think apparently he appears in costume. I think it's because it originated from the fact that poor old Spencer Percival was shot, and then his body laid to rest for 5 days in Downing Street. And the great story, and I heard one of these sort of secondhand, was that that one of the guards was in a kind of sentry box in the garden, and he heard lots of footsteps down on the gravel path, and he absolutely swears that there was no explanation for it. And another more famous story is that there were actual footprints seen in the snow, and apparently, reportedly, it's Spencer Percival's pallbearers as they were taking him out for his funeral procession.
Now, some people will be listening to this and thinking that you and I have both lost the plot. Are you someone who previously believed in ghosts? Is it just your experience of working in Downing Street? Do you believe all these stories?
I was just having the same thought, Matt. It slightly worries me what your listeners may think of me after this. I have actually lived, my dad was in the army, and we lived in quite a few haunted houses. And I suppose I've never seen a ghost. My wonderful grandfather swears he thought our two girls were dressing up one night. He saw someone walk past in a big dress. And that was the first ghost story I ever heard. And my grandfather was not, a silly, fanciful man. So I guess that's why I take people at face value.
And if that's what they say, if they say the toilet door in the number 10 flat is haunted, then maybe it really is.
There are just so many stories, Matt, and they were all told to me by very, very good, honest people, and there were no other explanations. So I believe them, and I think the world should, open up its imagination to such stories, definitely.
Well, I think you could be right, and what better time to do that than a few days before Halloween itself. So, Joe, it's been really good to speak to you, and now let's take a listen to the story of David, the facilities manager, as he describes the day that he came across a ghost in number 10.
We were doing a recruitment exercise for a new member of staff, and we booked the small dining room for to do that interview. I arrived very early that morning, about 6 o'clock in the morning as it happened, in weather conditions where it was total black outside, so there was no natural lights on outside, no electric lights inside beyond the service corridor. And I just stuck my head in the room on the way up to my office to make sure that everything was kosher in the room. And as I put my head into the small dining room without any lights on, I was conscious of some lights underneath the door of the that go through to the state dining room. And thinking we'd had a couple of issues with uplighters being left on overnight, which shouldn't have happened. So thinking it was that, I walked into the small dining room to go over to the double doors to open up the state dining room to see what it was. And as I passed the end of the table, someone walked past me, and I jumped out of my life because obviously I'm on just some light that's coming through from the door. Spun round, but couldn't see anyone there, but had felt a real presence and heard what I described later as the sound a taffeta dress makes, the sort of rustle of skirts and so forth. Obviously, sort of, it wasn't a cleaner in the room or anything like that, so I've sort of like stopped what I was doing, can't work that out, and then no malicious presence or anything like that, but just couldn't identify what it was. And about 2 hours later, one of my colleagues came in, and basically I sort of related this to him, and he said, "Oh, you've seen the ghost?" And I went, "Yeah, what ghost?" And was then told that there is a lady in a white ball gown who goes between the state dining room and the pillared room. And I didn't know that, and I'm kind of one of those people who disbelieves that kind of thing without some kind of evidence. Except that it happened to me. I can't explain it. It's still sending shivers up my spine now. As I say, no malicious presence, but just something that absolutely sort of made me jump out of my skin at the time.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box podcast. You can now listen back to my whole show on the Times Radio app, where you can also now listen to all of the Times podcasts, including Red Box 2. Make sure you subscribe and review at the Red Box podcast wherever you listen. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.